brave anglers search for the one they call King, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night, floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better public land hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I am your one and only host tonight, Clay Bowers, and I'm joined by Danny Perrott. Danny is an herbalist extraordinaire I've been following for a long time on social media, and I think he's really cool, and I think you guys will too. Danny, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Clay, of course. My name is Danny. I go by the People's Herbalist, and I am an herbalist specializing in adaptogenic herbs. I call myself the People's Herbalist because I believe the people come first, and then we use the herbs to subsequently enhance the person. My traditional education is sociology and psychology. So people, when in their environment, experiencing their stresses and recovering and feeling the best that they can has always been at the forefront of my mind. But I use these herbs as nature's tools to help people actually feel better internally and thus have better emotional health and better overall health. So I create goodies and different innovative ways for people to enjoy these herbs, which is, that's my claim to fame and my favorite part about the sciences.
Man, that's awesome. What are some common things that you're encountering on a day-to-day basis that people have?
Always people are talking about fatigue, but more recently people have been getting sick again. Just wintertime colds, but people often come to me when they are pretty much done with the medical system where they've gone through the entire process and everything has failed them.
Yeah.
So they look for, natural, safe alternatives, which I think should be the priority, but, they call it the alternative. And I provide counseling, and then I also provide some of the herbs that I think match, the areas of opportunity that they are experiencing. And then, we consult and I get those plants over to them in a way that they're comfortable consuming, and everybody wins.
Yeah. So you live in the New York area. How easy is it for you to, say, get out and actually pick and interact with plants? Or are you mostly interacting with plants like from other herbalists? I'm just trying to gather basically like how hard it is for you to interact with plants in nature.
When it comes to the actual foraging portion, it is very difficult, okay. Especially because the population is so dense in this area. The trees and little forest areas, they're not very wild. They're very stepped on. So pollutants everywhere. So I don't like to forage in the heavily densely populated areas, but I do like to hike. I find areas to hike, especially along the Hudson River, because I'm right outside of New York City, like right by the George Washington Bridge. Wow. But there's definitely opportunities, and I'm a consistent hiker. I walk around, I hug trees. I identify as much as I can when I see mushrooms and things out there, but I don't forage or pick too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I would find myself probably having that same exact dilemma. I would want to, you know, before I live now in Northern Michigan, but I moved up here 14 years ago.
Okay.
And I used to live in the Metro Detroit area, and same thing, you know, everything was very polluted, but I chose to forage anyway. I probably actually ate a lot of toxins I shouldn't have. It's as I told you before we got recording, I have a little bit of a cold. So it's, you know, maybe it's like ironic that you came on today, the herbalist guy. It's cold and flu season, or at least the tail end. What would you give me or tell me that I should take, you know, right now?
Yes. So for cold and flu season, there's a couple of herbs that I suggest, or at least I hold high, especially astragalus. That's one of my favorites, but I like to blend it with a couple of other herbs as well in support of the immune system. Astragalus by itself is very well known for increasing T cells and immunity, and known as an antiviral within Chinese medicine. It has benefits to the lungs. It's shown to be useful against previous coronaviruses. And it also has benefits to influenza. American ginseng is a combination that I like to add in there as well, which is, I mean, it's really hard to find organic, or at least wild harvested American ginseng, because it's so rare. And in fact, you know, that's actually a whole nother topic of discussion. The American ginseng is definitely, when it's used in a remedy value, the research is there for having a lot of benefits for people that are really sick or prone to sickness, especially with the influenza. Reishi is another one, but yeah, there's several different herbs that are really good for respiratory health and, you know, helping the immune system.
So I know that you're an herbalist, and you say the people's herbalist, right? So you're focusing on people first. Obviously, I think that implies the other steps are taken first and foremost, probably before you would give somebody an herb. So what would some of those things be? Like, what comes to mind for me would be, you know, sleep, getting adequate sunlight, things like that.
Absolutely. That's always the prerequisite. You know, before you even think that the herbs are going to be very beneficial for you, you got to make sure you're doing little things. You're actually going outside and getting fresh air. You're taking time to take deep breaths, to inhale as much oxygen as possible, to open your airways, to, you know, move lymphatic system. Sleeping is it's A1. There's nothing more important to our body, to our metabolism, to our immune function, and to our nervous system than adequate sleep. So, taking those basic steps is definitely a prereq before we even consider the value of the herbs, or at least the herbs don't work as well if your body is not doing the basic things. And I didn't mention nutrition and actually hydration, but these are absolutely critical. If you're going to do an herbal protocol, you got to make sure you're doing the most basic wellness protocols first for those herbs to be efficient. Because a rundown body isn't going to absorb nutrients appropriately. The immune function is going to be all off. It doesn't make sense to try to herb yourself into health if you're not working to do the most basic things.
Yeah. You know, what I find paradoxical is so many people that are herbalists like yourself are in like a city environment where you would think like, okay, it's kind of obvious that you would want to have better health and breathe good and, you know, take care of everything. But a lot of people that live out in the country that have access to these things don't do as good of a job taking care of their health. And especially in our world, the hunting world, there's a lot of people who are like waking up really early to go hunting, right? And then maybe like staying up the night before until 2 a.m. and drinking alcohol or whatever. So in that regard, If you had to recommend an herb that helps somebody like sleep good for a shorter duration, what would something be like that?
You mean getting better rest?
Better rest, even if it was a shorter amount of time, yeah.
In a short amount of time. There are a couple of herbs that help ease the nervous system. And I think that's going to be crucial. Sleeping is a multi-stage process. So if you can shorten the beginning stage of that wind down, then you'll automatically get into the other stages a little more fast. But that I say that to say easing the nervous system with like a reishi, which is a calming herb. Also Indian ghost pipe. It's more of an analgesic or a pain reliever, but it does have some sedative properties. So it can ease your body into a rest state a little quicker. Valerian root is another one. And then everybody knows the old chamomile is grandma's favorite recipe for everybody. That's definitely something to help with rest as well.
You know, you bring up the Indian pipe or ghost pipe. Luke is going to be listening to this and editing it, and he's not on right now, but he asked me to get him some and make him a tincture last year. And I just now remembered that I've got a tincture of Indian pipe or ghost pipe just sitting right above my fridge, that I made. How often are you finding that, or have you interacted with that in person, or is that something that you get as a dried herb?
Yeah, I have seen it. I've seen it in person when I go out here in Jersey. They have them growing in random places, but I found one by a waterfall. Wow. Actually, it was a nice bunch of them all in one area, which was the first time I actually saw it in the wild, which I just started geeking out.
Yeah.
They're available. You're going out and you're in wilderness, you can find them. And I think the tincture processing of them is so cool because they are a pigmentless plant, right? They have no chlorophyll. I thought that's like one of the most interesting things. You have a plant that doesn't have what all plants use is blood, technically. So it's like a vampire plant in many instances. And it's really cool because when you tincture it, it turns purple. I thought that's one of the more interesting thing about it too. So yeah, I really like that plant.
Yeah, it's actually surprisingly abundant up here by me, and it's one of those plants that gets this reputation as being extremely rare, but those who live in like the areas where it grows, it's never rare, and so I actually see it so often when I'm harvesting chanterelles in the summer months that I use it as a way to tell me if chanterelles will grow there. So like, for instance, I think it's actually a really good indicator that you're in a chanterelle woods if you see ghost pipe.
Really? That's noted. That's a good tidbit.
Yeah. So actually they will usually even come up right next to each other. So chanterelles will grow right up next to the ghost pipes.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're really awesome, very abundant. I don't know why so many people think that they are not. I don't know. Maybe they don't get out and go to waterfalls like you. I saw that you were recently with William Padilla Brown, right? Is that his name?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, he's another guy that I really been following for a while, and he's just really cool. Really cool dude. He's all about mushrooms. Luke specifically asked me that I need to get your take on mushrooms while we're here. What are some good mushrooms? What are some ways that you tincture? What kind of alcohols would you use if you were going to do a tincture, et cetera, et cetera?
I like grain alcohol, just a food grade grain alcohol for the most part. I try to use as little alcohol as possible in the tinctures that I make. That's a personal preference. I don't like the bite of like a high tincture. But the mushrooms, that's my favorite, I would probably say, is chaga.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a it's a beast of a mushroom for pineal gland health. Also high in antioxidants. I mentioned reishi. I'll mention her again. She's a favorite of mine. We're talking mushrooms, right? We're just talking the medicinal mushrooms.
Medicinal okay. mushrooms. Yeah,
not
yeah.
the sacred mushrooms.
Yeah, not, maybe we can talk about those later. Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I really love the chaga. I love the reishi. I love the cordyceps as well, which mm-hmm. is something Will kind of made his claim to fame as, you know, one of the first cultivators of cordyceps.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. It's one of the things that drew me to him. I was like, yo, I remember seeing him on Fantastic Fungi.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of blown away. I was like, yo, I don't know where this guy is, but I'm gonna meet him. We're gonna be friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to have crossed paths with him and we became friends.
That's awesome.
And he hosts this event called Michael Fest every year. It's been about 9 years running now. Phenomenal event, bringing mycologists from across the country, across the world.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be, you know, lucky enough to go there and get to present some of the research that I do in regards to using medicinal herbs for people and case studies and different scenarios of health and putting the herbs to the test and then sharing those findings with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the world wants to minimize the value of the medicinal mushrooms in regards mm-hmm. to helping people heal, especially when it comes to conditions that they consider uncurable.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, the cancers and things like that. Mm-hmm. But in my, you know, I've seen things and I can't, you know, put this stuff on my social media, but when I do have an opportunity to talk freely at these festivals and gatherings, meetings of the mind, I get to share this information and then people can take that and try to duplicate what I've done and, you know, see similar results, help their families and friends in the face of censorship of herbal medicine to help people heal.
Yeah, no, that is for real. There's a lot of hate, and I don't know if it's like bots or something, but it seems like there's been an uptick in this whole, like, there's a couple things, anti-herbs. I see like a tremendous amount of just random hate of raw milk, which I think is just weird. You know, it's like, if you don't like dairy, that's fine. But like, it doesn't hurt you if other people drink raw milk, you know?
Exactly.
And then like somehow there's been like a demonization of exercise that sort of happened a little bit. And that, all these things are just like so weird to me. But obviously like in your space, in my space, like we both really like plants and the demonization of the herbs and what I like to hear or what I think is funny is people will say, well, herbs don't work, you know, and they drink coffee every morning, you know.
Exactly. You know, it's like you can't say that while you're constantly drinking a remnant of the herb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the funniest thing to me is when I look at the WebMDs of the world, like the .coms for the three letter agencies, and you'll hear a physician say, you know, the medicinal mushroom isn't going to help with your cancer. But then you go on the Sloan Kettering website and then the same mushroom chaga, they have a research article showing how it can help with this, that exact cancer. So wow. There's a total disconnect between the people that are prescribing and diagnosing and the websites of the organizations that are employing them. And mm-hmm. that alone is, it just shows a sign of, you know, idiocracy that's coming out for people looking for for solutions. Imagine your doctor says that thing doesn't work, but you were on that same doctor's website reading an article on how this could be beneficial to you. That type of confusion really does damage to the public in many instances. That's why I feel as if, you know, it's a priority to speak more about it and to empower people, to let them know that you have your full freedom to choose what kind of treatments you're going to take or what you're going to put into your body, and, you know, open the door to people, other people's experience. Or I can use my platform to share other people's experience, to give, you know, a person that has never heard anything, I never even looked into herbs, the reality check, like, hey, if it helps with this person, who this is a stranger that I've never met, but they've said that this can be beneficial because it helped them, then maybe it can help me. And that's, I mean, this is the battle that we're facing right now. Sharing this information freely and accurately, and then trying to back it up with science. But however, they feel like science can only be done in one way, and that's the third, the triple blind placebo controlled trials, and all the isolation processes to keep only test one herb for one specific thing, or one that is, it's essentially a wild goose chase, because a person doesn't live in an isolated environment. A person is not a cell in a petri dish. A person has spirit, has energy, it has all these other things that a clinical control trial just eliminates. And those portions, the beauty of herbs is they're more than just the phytonutrients. They also have the energy of the planet. And you can't isolate that or measure that in a laboratory. You need to experience it that when you ingest these plants, whether it be the mushroom, a root, a bark, a berry, a leaf, or a flower. You know, that stuff is in its entirety. When you consume it, it has such a different effect on the body. And that's where I think the Western medical system is really screwed up, because they can't reconcile that with the scientific method that they're used to.
Yeah. No, that was very well said. I think that basically one of the biggest hindrances to further developing the cause of herbalism is that it doesn't make them money.
Of course. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And they're never, like, for instance, with chaga, I mean, by me, I was just taking my dog on a walk the other day, and I just found a big old chunk, and I just walked right by it. I was just like, whatever, you know, I got enough. I mean, it grows all over the place. I mean, by me, if you have birch trees, then you can find it. But chaga is awesome. What do you do? I'm assuming you order chaga, and then do you powder it? Do you tincture it?
Actually, for my chaga, there are two experts that I work alongside that have taught me a ton, but they're so good at what they do. I said, I'm not going to try to replicate your 20 years of experience. If I can get you the product, the raw material, can you do your process and then send me a bulk of the tinctures, and then I can then use that as my paint and start creating different combinations. So I have relationships with a couple of chaga producers.
Okay.
That send me all the extracts.
Okay. So you do predominantly take tinctures then with chaga?
Right. Mostly tinctures, and then I combine them with different beverages. But there is one product. I gotta plug my man Garrett from Birch Boys Chaga. he makes this powdered chaga extract. So it's not powdered chaga. It's an extract of chaga, which is then powdered. So it's like very, very potent. And the way that he does it, I haven't seen anything out there like it. And it just seamlessly goes right back into a water. Like it's nothing, super concentrate. Wow. But yeah, that's the only powder that I use. Usually everything that I have is in its tincture form.
Okay. Now I can't let you get by this conversation without addressing oxalates. What do you know about chaga and oxalates? And like, do you think that people should be worried about ingesting chaga if they do have problems like kidney stones?
So this is a very common question, and I've looked deep into this as deep as possible to figure out where the fear and of the oxalates came from. And it seems that every negative effect of the oxalates was taking a chaga ground or like the raw powder itself, mm-hmm. versus a full spectrum extract.
Okay.
I think that's the way to get away from the oxalate problem. Just have a full spectrum extract versus like a ground up chaga powder. I know that there was a research article showing that I think it was an older gentleman, might have been a female. Mm-hmm. And she took an excessive amount of chaga and was putting it on topically. Mm-hmm. And she got some kidney damage from the oxalates, from the actual conch of the chaga itself.
Okay.
So that's the biggest issue. But kidney stones and chaga extracts, you're not going to really have that.
So what about just ingestion of chaga? Like for us, I don't do it very often, but maybe once every 2 weeks, I'll make some chaga. And I'll just brew up some chaga and drink it like that. That's not an extract, so I am going to be getting a little bit of the oxalates, but I'm imagining that some of it is going to be going away with cooking or heating in some way.
Yes, I mean technically it is an extract. It's just a water extract. So if you you put it in a stew or something like that. You're just getting the extract itself for the most part, water extract. We're missing a few of the healing molecules, like the triterpenes and things that come that need like an alcohol extract, but still, that's not something to be worried about, especially if you're not drinking a lot of chaga and you're using it appropriately. I wouldn't suggest drinking a gallon of chaga tea a day, especially if you already know you have kidney stones. Mm-hmm. But the risk there is very minimal in comparison to the benefits of drinking chaga.
Yeah. So I've heard you say that you mix these things into drinks. Does that mean that you're taking actual tinctures and then making like concoctions with those tinctures?
That's right.
Yeah. So what would be like a kind of like a drink that you drink regularly?
I have it on my website and it's called the Ambrosia. Mm-hmm. And it's a combination of hibiscus, blueberry, cranberry, rose hips, amla berry, and schisandra berry tea, right? So mm-hmm. I make a gallon of that tea. Then I'll take nettle tea and I will combine the hibiscus berry explosion with the nettle tea. Now blend it with some lemon juice, sweeten it with agave, add a little shilajit inside, and then I'll put a tincture of whatever is the flavor of the day, right? I have a combination I call chocolate gold that I like to use, which has chaga, astragalus root, and goji berries. And that one actually tastes like chocolate. It's really, really delicious tasting tincture. Probably the best I've ever had. It tastes like chocolate, but it has no chocolate in it. Mm-hmm. So I use that one pretty often. I use another blend I call Breathe pretty often inside of it. Another drink that I like to make is tamarindo juice or tamarind juice. Mm-hmm. I like taking tamarind juice and blending that with a lemonade and ginger and putting mm-hmm. seltzer. And then I put tinctures inside of that. But yeah, I like to have fun with it, man. There's so many different ways to make a yummy beverage, especially if you you have the berries or you have different forms of teas and different juices at hand. You can do a lot of things.
You make me feel like I'm a big slacker in my household. we'll have like anise hyssop and fireweed tea. Like that's like kind of our two staple teas in the house. Have you ever had fireweed?
I haven't.
Okay, so maybe I should when we're done, get your phone or your address and I'll send you some fireweed because we wild harvest it up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it's a tea that is non-caffeinated, but it's fermented and it tastes like black tea.
I would love to get some.
Yeah, so I'll have to send you. But that's kind of like one of our go-tos. And then we grow a garden here, and anise hyssop is just like, it goes crazy. It has a nice licorice flavor. It goes well with everything. I personally love it, so we drink a lot of that here.
Nice.
Yeah. But you make me feel like I'm like, what's wrong with me?
I do this for research and development purposes, and I'm always trying to make a different type of flavor. I go out and I do a lot of events, so I like to try to, you know, serve people different things, different colors, different tastes. So don't feel bad. I'm not doing this just because. I'm doing this for a purpose.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm messing with you, but yeah, teas have been a part of my life for a very long time. Is that one of the entry points for you that got you into this thing?
I always really loved tea. I would say that was probably a leaning point for me after I already got started within herbalism.
Okay.
Because I was like, I know teas are super versatile and there's a lot of things that we can do with it for people to consume.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was drinking, I would drink tea for the flavor. I didn't really even think about like the health benefits. Mm-hmm. But that didn't come until later after I started to study the herbs and realize, you know, the functions of anatomy and things like that.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of studying, I'm assuming, of the different cultures that have used herbalism throughout history. What is like a society that you think...
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Does something better than we do here currently? That exists in our world currently that uses herbalism.
You know, it'll be hard to find a country that has worse practice. But definitely India and China, mm-hmm. they still hold close some of the older traditions of Ayurveda and also traditional Chinese medicine. And you know, the cultural habits of them having these herbs that are just infused into all the foods that they eat, when they cook their food, for the most part, it's not highly processed. And in that country more so, in those countries more so than here. And then they're always incorporating herbs. That alone, you know, really improves the health of the population versus here, where, you know, the foods that we eat often doesn't have anything except for additional preservatives or chemicals that are often illegal in other parts of the world. But if I had to choose off the top, Japan, China, India, those definitely are countries with better herbal practice and respect to anatomy and respect of the herbs.
Yeah. Those countries do seem like they definitely value herbs a lot, especially the example that you made of India with the food. Like, I always think of India as having like medicinal food. And then and then like China, I just always like every Chinese market, I'm like, oh my God, what are all these herbs for? You know, like hundreds and hundreds of like little like bins with herbs that I've never even like my wildest dream. I wouldn't know what they are.
Right. It's yeah. Simple. Like the diversity alone really makes that the cultures stand alone. You know, like you're having so many different types of foods, even though they're all herbs, there's different types of them and you're consuming them in many different ways throughout the day, throughout your meals. Mm-hmm. That the diversity of phytonutrients is something missing in our culture. Usually we have, you know, the same 10 food items over and over and over again because we have the habits and we like the tastes and, you know, it's easy to prepare, muscle memory and things like that. But I think it's the diversity that is super, super big.
Yeah. Another country actually that does use a lot of herbalism that many people, I'm surprised, don't know this is Mexico. And when I used to live in Mexico, you know, 2005, 2006, like I used to live down there. The first time I was there, unfortunately, I took nobody's advice. I ate everything. I drank water. I did all that stuff. And I ended up getting, you know, I was eating like street food. Just like I did not care.
Man.
Like, and I ended up getting hepatitis A. So not B or C, but hepatitis A, which is like, you know, I mean, you live through it. Most people live through it. Yeah. But I found it kind of funny. I was laid out living at my best friend's house and his grandma, while she was still alive, she was making me chug tea like all day, every day. I don't know what teas she had me drinking, but I was better in like 7 days and I couldn't believe it. And she was just like forcing me to down all these different teas.
Look, she gave me the flush.
Yeah,
that's that's so like real. Grandma, yeah, feeding you the tea while you're struggling with hepatitis A, which is more like a foodborne illness.
Yeah,
which is really really interesting because they make it seem like, you know, you hear hepatitis, you think, oh man, you got a liver disease.
Yeah.
But no, you got a foodborne illness.
Basically, it's disgusting to think about, but I probably ate a taco from a guy that did not wash his hands after he went number two. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But so, yeah, the teas that flushes you out real quick.
Yeah. So Mexico though is awesome. They have a lot of them here. And I heard you say that earlier, tamarindo. Do you speak Spanish?
My wife is Dominican, so I know a little bit. I can understand a bit. I'm not very fluent though.
Oh, okay. It's a subject that people on this that listen to this podcast probably get annoyed with, but I'm a total like linguist crazy person. I speak Spanish, a whole bunch of French and German, and I just love languages. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So Spanish is I've been speaking that for 20 years now. It's my it's like basically, you know, might as well be English to me at this point.
I love it.
Yeah, so I heard you say that tamarindo, and I was like, "Oh, he speaks Spanish."
That's my Spanglish. That's my
okay. So, is Dominicans are they practicing herbalism at all?
Not really.
No,
I mean some basics at least. And the family that I'm in, I have not run across any herbalists yet. So I'm basically the herbalist of the family on my wife's side. Okay. But they definitely do use herbs. Let me not say that. Star anise is always in effect. Cinnamon is always in effect. Utilizing lemon for different teas and the rinds of the lemon. That's definitely, there's some remedies that definitely hold true, but in like the full practice of herbalism with multiple herbs used for specific reasons, not so much in the family. Not to say that there aren't any Dominican herbalists, obviously there are. But I'm kind of the go-to on this side.
Yeah. So we alluded to it a little bit earlier, and I really wanted to ask you about mushrooms, because obviously, like, in my mind and probably yours as well, healing the body is one thing, but you got to heal the mind too. I've seen you post multiple times about the healing powers of mushrooms, like psilocybin mushrooms. What role does that play in like an herbalist's tool belt?
Right now is a very unique time. Most herbalists in general have really stayed clear of talking about psilocybin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have too until recently. And, you know, obviously there's changes in legalities, there's decriminalization, there's the drastic increase in research that cannot be hidden anymore. There's a massive desire for people that want to know more. So there's definitely, now is the time for anybody that does have knowledge. I happen to have some base knowledge from being in with the mushroom community, I should say. I wouldn't call myself a psychonaut. I don't have that much experience with psychedelics, but I do know a lot of people that have done a very large amount and have shared with me different insights. I go the folk side where, you know, we have the traditional spiritualists practice of utilizing psychedelics, especially the medicinal mushrooms, for transformation, for PTSD, for trauma, even past life trauma, which I found really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Obviously depression and anxiety in many instances. When we're talking about macro doses is one thing, and then when we're talking about micro doses, it's a totally different thing. But I found that the micro doses is probably the safest place for everybody to begin, at least if they are interested in exploring these sacred mushrooms, probably starting with a small amount and seeing how that can impact your daily life. That's the approach that I would take, and that I have taken, I should say. I've seen the benefit of taking a microdose, and it's not something that you would do every day. It doesn't even give you the sensation like coffee, because people are addicted to coffee. It's not something that's addicting. It is honestly and truly a very safe and very useful tool that people can start to explore. People are exploring, but anybody that has never done it before knows about the stigma behind it, or, you know, maybe a religious or a moral type of thing. Look at it like it's medicine, because it truly is medicine. And mental health and psychiatric conditions and depression and all kinds of mood disorders are plaguing our society in many different ways. I mean, the individuals experiencing those things, but also the loved ones or family members that may have, you know, gotten screamed at or mistreated because of somebody experiencing, you know, an episode. So you think about a substance that grows naturally, that does not have toxicity to organ systems, and it's fairly simple to consume. It's not something that's that takes a lot, or it's going to, you know, do too many additional changes to your body. It just has a simple effect on your brain, especially in the micro dose. And I'm talking specifically to micro dosing here, because the macro doses, those should be under controlled settings. You should be with an expert if you're going to do this, whether it be a psychiatrist, because now we have psychedelic assisted psychotherapy in many places, which is an interesting change of pace where, you know, people can go and actually be in the presence of a professional in a healthcare setting and have someone essentially hold their hand while they experience something that's life altering in almost every report from people that have done this. So I think if you ask me about these sacred mushrooms, I think they should be absolutely legal. And even though they shouldn't be for everybody, I think if you are willing to take psychiatric medications for whatever issues that you're dealing with, then you should probably consider utilizing a microdose of psilocybin to see what benefits it can offer you.
Yeah. What are some of those benefits of, like, you spoke to the brain, and like, can you name off some of those things for us so we can understand?
For sure. So taking a microdose, this has different mechanisms to create new neural networks. So your brain is firing at different places to different areas, which essentially can help you problem solve, and problem solving for work, but also problem solving for your personal life. Everyone has problems and stresses and they get bogged down, but if you can get a bright idea to kind of get you out of that funk, that can be invaluable. It definitely increases the rate in which your brain fires. And that's, you know, that's crucial. More activity in the brain means more possibilities for you mentally, your focus, for your creativity. Some people say it helps with their eyesight and their hearing and their spatial awareness. So I'm not making that claim, but I've heard many people say that. And I think that that's enough for, you know, that's very interesting. If you can improve your awareness, just think about that. You can be a better meditator. Even though meditation is something that's it's very difficult for a lot of people. Just being able to clear your mind is not something that is a very easily achievable task. So,
I can speak from experience there. I was a yogi and a meditator for many, many years, and then somewhere around 7 years ago, I just kind of fell off, and I got to get back into it. But man, I meditated every single day, and now I find it kind of hilarious. I think about, like, okay, I try to meditate, and I just, like, I get so distracted, I can't do it, and it's like these smartphones.
I'm telling you, they will distract you. Mm-hmm. It's in this day and age, having this thing stuck to your hip. Someone always has access to you. There's always a notification. There's always something happening that you need to pay attention to. So, you know, it's tough. Yeah. But just like using a microdose in many instances, it just makes you feel better. A lot of people say they call it a good day. Like taking a microdose, this is just a good day. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, maybe you won't be able to put your finger on specifically what happened, but you just, it's like water off the back of a duck, and you can go to bed.
Yeah. The only issue I see at all with it is the legality of even acquiring these substances, right? And then dosing a person, right? So, like, I don't know how much you weigh, but I personally am at an embarrassing, like, 220 right now, and I really need to get drop that down, hence me telling you I've been running every day. And I, you know, like, a microdose for you is not a microdose for me, right?
That's correct. Very correct. In fact, it's so correct that it's almost paradoxical, because the microdose for you is not the same microdose for me, but the microdose of two people that are 220 pounds is not the same for each other either. So the bioindividuality plays just as much a part as the weight distribution, which to me, it was like mind blowing, because I know like big guys, they'll take a little bit, like, whoa, that was intense. And then, you know, 115 pound lady takes the same amount and she's like, yo, I didn't feel anything. This stuff doesn't work.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it definitely goes on an individual basis, but the rule of thumb is around 100 milligrams or 200 milligrams is the sweet spot for a microdose. And then the caveat to that is every strain of mushroom has a different potency. And then on top of that, every specific strain has its own individual changes in potency itself. So there's a lot of small, minute things that totally eliminates the ability to make any blanket statements. But utilizing it in a small amount and finding what works for you that's always going to be the solution.
Yeah, I could actually see, bring this whole thing back around here. You said vision and hearing, which I've also heard before, right? That could actually be a potent helper for hunters, you know, since this is a hunting podcast. I mean, they could take a little micro dose and then go out hunting and then maybe have the wherewithal to do a little bit better during their hunting trip.
That's absolutely true. I have not hunted. I have been in the deer hunter stand, but I've never actually shot anything. But I've shot a basketball with a microdose and I was spot on.
You're not morally opposed to hunting. You just never done it and you never, yeah.
Right. I just haven't done it. I know it's a tool that I wish I had in my toolbox one day. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who has a crossbow. I'm not a crossbow, but a compound bow.
Yeah. Hey, there's no shame. Luke always makes fun of me because I have a crossbow. you know, whatever. It's fine. I don't think that there's any shame in having a crossbow. Obviously, it's not as... There's no skill to using a crossbow. It's like using a gun.
Okay.
But I admit it, you know, it's like, I'm not out there hunting to be cool. I'm like trying to provide meat for my family, you know?
You know, we don't need no flair for that.
Yeah. So, the hunting world is full of all kinds of people who will definitely get on your case if you use a crossbow. And then there's people like me, and I'm just like, I don't care. One day, maybe I'll try to pick up the bow when I have a little bit more time and hunt. But I want to be able to shoot accurately and not just wound an animal.
That's true.
Yeah. So either way, so you would potentially someday go out hunting, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
If you did, what would you go for?
Honestly, I'd probably start off with like rabbit.
Rabbit is amazing and an excellent thing to start on.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like a beginner, nothing easier to skin. You can pull a cottontail rabbit skin off with your bare hands.
Hmm.
And really accessible. I mean, the meat, the flavor, it's basically chicken.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so cottontail rabbits are basically chickens. They're just like real fast chickens that run around. I have them directly out my yard out here all the time, and my dog is a hunting dog. He's just a puppy right now, but he has luckily killed one of them so far because they're eating all of our stuff in our garden.
Mm.
Yeah, but yeah, rabbit would be an awesome thing for you to start on someday. If you ever do do that, let me know. I'd love to maybe come out to New York. You know, it's far away from you, but my sister lives in New York State.
Okay, she's upstate.
Yeah, she lives over by it's called Gloversville. So the foothills of the Adirondacks.
Okay.
Yeah. And my mom used to live there, so I used to go to New York State all the time. But never been to New York City ever.
Never.
Never. I just never I never really had the desire to like go out there, cuz I lived in Mexico City for a little bit, and I was like, oh, what's one big city and another, you know? I don't know. I'm sure I would find it very interesting though if I went out there.
It's totally different. Yes, it would absolutely find it different. The culture shock would be crazy. The people of New York City are animals. It's called the concrete jungle for a reason. The subways, you would probably you would have a ball in there, because there's nothing like it. The city is definitely someplace that I think people should visit at least once, but this is not a place that you want to constantly be in. I got out of New York as fast as I could when I was living out there. But, you know, no shade to the people making a living in the city. But in order to find your maximum amount of health and wellness and happiness and joy and peace, you definitely got to find your way out of there and ground yourself, because it's the mess of population. It gets crazy and wears down on you.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, I used to live in Metro Detroit, and you know, the population is not as big as New York City, not nearly as dense. But it still is very wearing on you. It's like mentally being in traffic all the time and just like constantly, you know, being exposed to that level of toxins from every car. It's like, ugh, spending so much time driving. You know, I don't know if that was your case in New York, because I feel like New Yorkers do get a little bit more exercise.
No, the traffic is nuts. The traffic is absolutely bananas. And they got tolls everywhere.
Yeah.
They're putting tolls in places that tolls were never at before. And then they're increasing the tolls that are already around. So they're doing everything that they can to, you know, slow down the amount of people that are in the city, because they clearly know that it's overpopulated. But yeah, it's there's a significant amount of people, I should say, that are still very, very unhealthy, even though that they're walking. It's a mess. It's a mess in the city.
You know what? The New York system's got to emulate the Mexico City system. Every single car in Mexico City is on a registration, and if you get color-coded tabs on your car, and one day a week you can't drive your car.
Oh, dude.
You're not allowed to. So if you're driving around with those and a cop catches you driving, you're going to get a big ticket.
Wow. So everyone gets a day off from driving. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, they make it because so that law, I think, was passed in Mexico City back when that was the biggest city in the world. There was 40 million people living in one city.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think they were like, this is crazy. We got to do something about this, you know. But yeah, that seems like that would be a pretty popular thing to do in many big cities.
I can see that.
Yeah. So, what new projects you got going on? Anything cool? Before we get out of here, I just want to give you some time to tell everybody about future projects you got going on.
Oh, yeah. Some awesome things that we have coming in the future. Immediate future, on Friday, I'm actually having a tasting party. It's a social gathering, mocktail, happy hour type of vibe, where I'm bringing all the products that I create, and I have several different beverages, concentrated juices, Obviously, the extracts, I have a hot sauce that's infused with astragalus root, and I have honey that's infused with astragalus root. I have all kinds of things. So I'll be bringing all of my products out and allowing people to taste them and give me their feedback so I can continue to innovate in my company, Parrot Food and Beverages. So that's one thing coming up. On March 25th, I'll also be hosting or co-hosting a event with my partner, Nakai, is from American Dreamers, who is putting on a women's focused event at a movie theater. So we'll be renting out a movie theater and showing a movie called Show Her the Money, and then having a panel there for investors, for entrepreneurs, especially female entrepreneurs. But later down the line, which I'm really excited for, is this summer I'm going to be getting a 40-foot bus. A 40-foot bus that's been converted from a passenger bus to a mobile herbal clinic. And so I'm going to have this down and we're bringing it into Newark, New Jersey first, which is, you know, a very impoverished area within Jersey, with a lot of need for people to get healthy. So we'll be bringing the bus out. We'll be having a little festival with food. We'll be giving away free herbal packages, health scans from some of my friends in the healthcare industry will come out with me. And then we'll also have like arts and crafts, because the bus is it's white, but we're going to have some local artists and kids come and decorate our bus. So it'll be like an arts and crafts fair, food festival, music, wellness, kind of everything all in one. So this will be the first one this year. And I'm hoping to make this an annual thing and maybe something that I can do in different states. But yeah, so there's a lot of in-person events that I'm looking to champion for this year, but also continuing to innovate with different products that we have on our website, thepeoplesherbalist.com and herbalinfusionskitchen.com.
That's awesome, man. And then what about your social media?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on Instagram at thepeoplesherbalist with an underscore at the end.
Oh, and with an underscore at the end. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say that because not too long ago, it was impossible to find me on social media unless you spelled my whole name out because of the shadow banning that was going on.
But let me guess, you were speaking out about a certain sickness.
You got it. Crazy times, man. Crazy times.
Yeah, it seems like they just really like don't want anybody like talking out of turn.
Right. Nobody can question. Nobody can have additional alternative solutions. If you say anything that hinders the profits of the new protocols and treatments that they pushed on the population, then they want you quiet.
Yeah.
And put you in the corner so nobody can hear you.
Yeah. Well, I will speak from personal example here is that I lost 1,000 followers over the course of you know, a couple, like 2 years there. Yeah, just because, just for having like basic questions, you know, not like sitting there calling people idiots or saying any of that stuff, just questioning things. It's a weird world.
It really is. And it goes to show the fragility of the human mind. Like if somebody asks you a question should not offend you. No. Not having the answer should bother you.
Exactly. Well, man, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I really applaud your work, and I think it's awesome. And I think that especially doing the work where you are is really important for people. And I hope that someday, you know, maybe in a year, we have you back on.
Yo, Clay, I appreciate it. It was a great conversation, and I would be happy to come back.
All right, man. We will talk to you next time.
All right, now, take care.
And once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.